Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 28 of the MV Red Podcast, the Independence Day special.
It's a special. Yeah.
We're going to make it a special this evening. So it's been probably 4 or 5 weeks since our last show. And actually, Dane and I met in person at, up in Cleveland out of the blue. What are the odds?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think we got 8 viewers currently. How many people normally download this show, Michael?
It ends up between the video and the audio, probably a couple hundred a show when it's all said and done.
That's not bad. That's pretty good. So if anybody's just now tuning in, we just spammed the link for the show to every group in the planet. So thank you. We hope you stay tuned. This is a local politics show, everything about Ohio politics, national politics, from a conservative perspective. Would you agree, Michael?
Yeah. And we encourage it. If the few of you who are tuning in thus far, if you'd like to help us out, by all means, maybe have a watch party, if that's still a thing on Facebook, or perhaps share it. Help us out. And if you know anybody who likes politics, by all means, tag them in the chat below.
Just and spam tell it.
Yeah, just put spam it for us.
Spam
it. We'd love and we would welcome opposing viewpoints as well.
Yeah, we don't make any money on this. So, you know, you're not really – it's not like you're making us richer, right? You're just spreading the good word, right? It's just a community group. Everybody can come in, you know. We've got the chat going. The chat's live. We've got 7 viewers, and we're just going to relax, have some water, and talk some local politics, because there's a lot going on, even though it's not an election year, isn't there, Michael?
Yeah, we do. And before we get into that, I do have my USA Nike shirt on here. Unfortunately, I looked at it before the broadcast, and it was made in China. So shame on you, Nike. You couldn't do better than that. Anyway, I wanted to rep it anyways because I still think it's a nice shirt. I like the design, USA.
It's really original. I've never seen USA with stars before, Michael. It's one of a kind.
It is one of a kind. Anyhow, so on tonight's show, kind of hit home. Part of it, we're going to gear more towards Ohio. The budget just passed. DeWine signed it, the governor, last night, I think pretty late in the evening. We'll talk a little bit about that. Then probably focus a lot of the show on the race on the Republican side for the Senate, as well on the Republican side for governor between Jim Renacci and Governor DeWine, and then on the Senate side with Jane Timken, Josh Mandel, and J.D. Vance, who officially announced this evening just within the last hour or so. So we're going to talk about that. And then I also want to talk a little bit about, because this is one of the things I was talking about at work with one of my coworkers in recent weeks, kind of something, I guess I'm going to make an early prediction. I think there's going to end up being some friction between Trump and DeSantis, which might surprise some people, and I'll explain my thinking behind that later in the show. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about. But by all means, if anybody has anything they'd like us to talk about, throw it in the chat. If you have any questions, we can make it as interactive as possible. We'd love to do that. So,
you know, Mike, one thing we got to talk about, or Michael, I should say, let's keep it professional.
Whatever you like to call me.
The rise of critical race theory. This has become, within the last couple of months, a huge issue And in fact, in Solon, Ohio, so right next to me, I'm in Bainbridge, they're in Solon. The parents and students are in revolt over the addition of DEI, diversity, inclusion, and equity training and critical race training. And it's an issue that's going on in Chagrin Falls School. So I don't know if it's a big issue in the Mahoning Valley, but at least here in Cleveland and the Cleveland suburbs, the rise of critical race theory in the classrooms is becoming a really big deal in the Flashpoint. So I don't think we have to have that for this episode, but I think that's going to be a – we should – if anybody from Solon is watching and they want to talk about critical race theory, you know, hop in the chat today or we'll do a separate episode because it's a big deal. People are talking about it, and people are really pissed off about it too.
It's something that seems to have flown under the radar. I would actually give credit to – somebody who's I consider a friend of the podcast and who's been on a couple of times, Ryan Gerdusky, who's one of the ones who really blew this whole issue up in recent months. I would say after the 2020 election, that's been one of his main things that he's been harping on, this idea of critical race theory. And I think it's become a greater focal point, at least those on the right, to highlight what is being taught, especially I would say more so in our public schools as opposed to the private schools. But what's being taught in the public schools as it relates to the idea of race. Now, going back to my education, I think we probably have, did you go to Catholic school kindergarten through eight or did you go to public school? Okay. So
excuse me, come on.
St. Mary's and Joseph or?
Yeah. Okay. Come on, dude. Yeah.
I just wanted
Did
to confirm.
Did you go to Catholic school?
Yeah, I went to Catholic school.
Well, I knew you went to a Catholic high school like myself. But I mean, I remember my background and you were taught the history of the country. You had this, you understood that like initially those coming into this country, the events that happened with Native Americans, those types of things, you were taught what was happening with what happened previously with civil rights, what happened with the Civil War, what happened, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, all those types of things. So you kind of had an understanding of, you know, there were some wrongs that occurred in this country, but I'm not an expert in this critical race education and push, but it seems as though they're trying to go at this even further and make it seem, I don't know what they're trying to make it seem like we're guilty of the wrongs of the past. Is that,
well, it's like it's a blood libel is how I would describe it. So there's this horrible thing against Jewish people that is just totally wrong. It's very anti-Semitic, which says that Jewish people, you know, have this guilt over the death of Jesus. And it was used to justify pogroms and other hatred against them throughout history. And if you look at critical race theory, it's not a theory, right? It's really just a collection of beliefs. It's not scientific. There's not the empirical method that tries and tests things and, you know, has theories and takes evidence and argues. It's really kind of like it's a voodoo theory, and it just assumes that all white people are guilty and they have this mysterious force called privilege. And it's like a miasma, right, that kind of inhibits the air. And it can be used anytime, and this is a real quote, anytime there's a difference between racial groups, it must be due to racism. And, you know, it focuses on white people exclusively as being the cause and problem, the cause of all the problems in the country. It's not, oh, and then defenders of the critical race theory will say, like, oh, we're just teaching about slavery, right? Or we're just teaching about the injustices or the civil rights era. But that's really not what it is. It's a new radical ideology. But again, maybe that's for another time. It's a little woke, but they are fighting it out in Solon, and we should get one of the local parents on. I think that'd be a great episode.
That would be. I think the other important aspect of this is it's highlighting the importance of local races that perhaps in the past, the average voter who really only cared maybe about voting in the midterms and the general, it forces them to have a greater appreciation and a greater attention to what is happening on a local level, especially as it relates to public schools and their school districts. So although we might disagree with the idea of critical race theory, I think the one good aspect of it, it's again, highlighting what is being taught in our schools, and it's hopefully making it for the average voter, making it more important to actually follow these school board races, because I think it matters. I think back a couple months ago in Texas, there were some, I think around Dallas, I remember, there were some pretty highly fought, I don't know what they were. There were some pretty big battles for school board in some suburbs around Dallas, and it seemed as though the candidates who opposed critical race theory won, and the turnout in those races were much higher than a traditional school board race that you would see in a typical election. So I think it's going to be something that's going to grow, something that's going to be something that those on the right are going to have to watch more closely. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, what do we got on the docket? We got a lot going on in Ohio politics. Ohio is hot right now, and people are fired up. And what is at the top of your agenda? What do you think? What's going on?
Well, I wanted to highlight, we don't necessarily have to talk about it a great deal, but it's the Ohio budget that Governor DeWine passed. And I think one of the interesting things of note is, and I'm pulling up the exact numbers in a minute here. So the Republicans dominate. We've talked about this many times. The Republicans dominate the state house in Columbus, and the budget in Ohio, I'm getting the exact numbers here. It passed pretty overwhelmingly. I think in the Senate, it passed something like 31-1 or 32-1. I'm trying to find the exact numbers here. I apologize, everybody. And then in the Senate, it passed overwhelmingly as well, which I found to be interesting, because there's definitely some red meat in there. But I think the Democrats realize that they don't have much of a bargaining chip. They can only get so much, and they're happy to get, if they could get 20 or 25% of what they want, they would go with it. And unfortunately, I can't find the exact numbers right now. But anyhow, there's just a few components of it that I thought were kind of interesting. So first, there's a tax cut across the board of 3%. Anybody who makes less than $25,000 now in the state of Ohio, so I would think a lot of, especially if you're like a college student or something like that, have a job like that, just, you know, making some extra money, you're not going to be paying any taxes in Ohio. They really beefed up education funding. Now, I don't necessarily know this entire formula, but I know the House was working on some sort of formula where there was less of an emphasis on property taxes for school districts and more of an emphasis on just funding it by pupil. I don't know all the details there, but I just know that they funded it by, let's see, $20 billion, 8.7% more than the previous budget. Not something I care about. Full disclosure, I'm on the board of a Catholic high school in Youngstown, but something something that's important to a lot of Catholic schools across the state are ed choice vouchers. And for high schools, that funding went up from 6,000 a student for those who are eligible up to 7,500. So quite an increase.
That's pretty significant.
It is.
$7,500 for a cat. I mean, even the, I didn't mean to interrupt you, finish your thought, but that does pay for most tuition, or if not all tuition, it will pay for a significant chunk.
Yeah, a significant chunk. So that's important. For K through 12, it went up from 4,600 or so to 5,500. So great increases for ed choice scholarships. I honestly do believe, from my readings, the ultimate goal in Ohio, and I think it's going to take time, baby steps, is going to open up vouchers statewide to every student. I think that's the path they would like to go, but they can't do it all at once. What I find interesting about this is, if you look at a map of Ohio, the reddest counties are not in urban areas that would traditionally have private schools. They're in especially like Western Ohio, heavy public school counties, just because they're not close to an urban center, so they're more public school districts. Those areas are represented by Republicans. So I think the Republicans across the state, especially in the legislature, have to really watch how far they go with this, because they could get backlash at the local level because they don't necessarily have many private schools within their district. So something to watch. A couple other things just to note, seem to have gone after two Southwest Ohio abortion clinics. Apparently there's some sort of variance in the law that allows them to operate I think those two abortion clinics are in jeopardy of even being in operation moving forward. And they provided an additional $6 million in some pregnancy centers with the hope of, you know, encouraging women not to have an abortion. And there's some other stuff with college students, athletes, that is, to benefit off their name and image. So a little bit of everything in there. I looked at some of his vetoes, governor's vetoes last night. The only one, there is one in particular. I'll let you talk about the budget first, but I'll highlight one.
Does the governor have a line item veto?
Yes.
Okay. This is what you're referring to. So he has the power to like veto line items in the budget.
Yes. And I'm going to try to find, there's one in particular that I thought was kind of interesting, where I think he bucked the party on it, but everything else was more traditional in nature. And if I could find that, and I'll share that in a minute.
Okay. Well, you know, a couple of thoughts. You know, I've always wondered why we don't move to a system whereby the state. So, okay, as a society, we obviously want our people to be educated. And there is a role for the state in providing for that education, given that we have different incomes across the population. If you go back even to the pre-revolutionary days in New England, in the early colonies, they had some form of social provision for education, right? And so the idea of a public school or public schools, I think, is it's well within constitutional government, it's well within limited government. The question to me is, what's the best form to produce that, right? And it seems like the model should be similar to how we have food stamps. We don't have government running the farms. We say that everybody's entitled to a certain level of food or caloric consumption. And so we give people money, right, on an individual basis or on a family basis to buy the food, but the provision of the food is in the private sector. So to me, I think the best model is the state guarantees funding for the pupil, purely for the pupil. Now, for some communities, it doesn't make sense to have a private school, right? Because if it's a rural community, it's small. So the pupil should be able to take that money to that public school, right? And then they can say, okay, this is, you know, we've got 100 kids, $10,000 per student, you know, that calculates to whatever it calculates out to. And there's our budget. And maybe the state tops it up, right, based on geography. But that to me, if the student wants to go to a private school for that education, as long as that private school is following certain standards in terms of the curriculum and in terms of the education, and I think that's their prerogative. That would be my model. So I guess, is that a voucher system? That would be a voucher system. But I would completely – I hate how in America, essentially the wealthy people have erected walls with property taxes to prevent poor families from coming into their schools because they know – I mean, here's the red pill on schools. I know this is a budget conversation, but
– No, you're good.
The reality is what makes good schools good are good parents and good families that produce good children, and those good children get results. Now, teachers help. And you know, having up-to-date facilities is crucial. I'm not arguing that. But the funding doesn't really produce the strong outcomes. And you were raised in a Catholic school system, and the per capita funding for kids in the Catholic school system is dramatically lower, to the order of several thousand dollars spent per student. But yet the results are superior to the public school system, right? Which shows there are other variables at work. So in my mind, you move to a system where everybody gets 15,000 or 10,000 and they can pick. And most kids will pick the public schools and that's fine.
Correct.
Some kids will want to pick the private schools and they should have that right. And I also think, and this is controversial, they should have the right to move public schools. If in this zip code, they have an A-plus public school, but in this zip code right next door to them, it's a D public school. Those kids in that D public school, because they can't afford to live in the wealthier zip code, should be able to take their dollars and move to the other one. It should be a complete open enrollment system. And then over time, what you would have is the poorly performing schools would get shut down and consolidated with the good performing schools. You'd have a little bit more mobility and I think a little bit better of a system. That's a very controversial take, but I don't know. So I think the voucher, I think, yeah, you're right. It's slowly moving to a voucher system and that's probably the right way to do it.
I feel as though, and I don't know if you know this offhand, I believe in West Virginia, they actually this year coming up are introducing a statewide voucher system for all students. I could be wrong on that. And if I am, I apologize. I thought I read an article on it, but I think they might be the first state to really open it up statewide. But I do think ultimately, because the Republicans have control of the state and they're going to continue having the control of the state, it's going to take time. I think baby steps, but I think the eventual goal is going to open it up. But you made a great point about the cost of educating in a Catholic school or a private school, that is, versus public. But think of the money being saved by the taxpayers. And people don't necessarily think this. If we're funding a student in a private school with a $7,500 voucher, but we're actually funding a student in a public school with $9,000 or $10,000, we're saving the taxpayers money. People might not want to think of it from that perspective, but they're funding a private school or a student to attend a private school, which at least I would say from the religious perspective, the religious schools tend to perform stronger than the charter schools. Yeah. I do think one thing that I don't quite understand with the Republicans statewide is they seem to have resistance to accountability with these charter schools, because I think there are some poorly performing charter schools throughout the state. And I think if you're going to go to the, I guess if you want to call it an extreme, although something that I would like to see, statewide vouchers, I think what you're going to do, the compromise there is to improve accountability for those schools. Perhaps they're on the exact same metrics as a public school, which I don't believe right now they are.
No. A question for you. The charter schools are hit or miss, right? But the charter schools are not necessarily drawing from the best and the brightest of the population. That's why the materials they have to work with are tough, right? So it's hard to say what's the true value add. I think there are a lot of scammers in the charter school system too.
I believe.
But a more competitive school system would allow the bad charter schools to go out of business, just like they should be able to enter into the market. They should also be able to exit the market, right? The other thing that I thought was interesting about the budget is the tax cut. And the idea of anyone making less than $25,000, they don't have to pay taxes anymore. This is going to be very controversial, but I think that's actually kind of a dangerous trend, right? Republicans, I'm all for lower taxes. I think the tax burden's too high. But Republicans have this notion of expanding the tax base or expanding the exemption to the tax base. And I think that what that does is it creates a class of people who are benefiting from government, benefiting from society, but are not contributing. And I think one thing taxes do is they make you civically minded, right? They make you pay attention to what's going on because you have skin in the game. It's your taxes. Don't forget what money is. Money's really your time and it's your life, right? So if they're taking your tax dollars, they're taking a little bit of your life. And, you know, even if it's like $100 or 50, $200 or something, not a lot of money, but if you're making under 25, you should have some skin in the game. I think that the movement should be to lower the tax rates and kind of compress it, but I don't think we should be exempting swaths of the population from the tax code. I think they should be paying income taxes. A lower rate, yes. I'm not saying, tax them out the wazoo, but I think the poor should pay taxes so that they are equally invested in society and they are equally civic minded. And when we say spending's going up, they're going to think, hey, that's some of my money that's going up. So I don't know if that's really the right call on the part of the budget plan to continually exempt people.
That's a fair point. Now, like on the federal side, with the way the tax law is written, there's such things as like standard deductions. And if you're under a certain threshold, you're not going to pay tax anyways. But it's not to the tune of $24,000 for like an individual. I know that from just doing taxes. So I see what you're saying there. I don't necessarily disagree. I think maybe you would probably be more inclined to support, let's just say 10,000 is the threshold and everybody from 10 to 24 pays 1.5% or something, just so they have some skin in the bit. You're always, right. I feel like you're always going to have a bracket that's going to pay nothing or virtually nothing. But I think if you at least have a bracket, maybe a lower one, even paying again, 1.5 to 2%, you have more people paying something in. It's not going to be a huge revenue driver, but the idea behind it is they have some skin in the game. They're going to pay more attention to how things are being done at the state house. So I see your point there. And currently though, right now it is 22,000. So if you're making less than 22,000, you're not paying tax in Ohio. So it's not like this is something new. They just increased the threshold there from 22 to 25,000.
Right. But yeah, I think, you know, so I think it's good. It was also kind of a very symbolic tax cut. I mean, if you look at some, let's say a middle class income of like $80,000 or $70,000, they're only getting a couple dollars back, like 30, 40 bucks. And not to say that's a bad thing, right? I think the reality is Ohio needs far steeper income tax cuts. I think we are becoming uncompetitive nationally. And I think you look at states like Florida and Texas that don't have income taxes and somehow make do. They are booming and they're doing very well. Even Tennessee, I don't think Tennessee has an income tax. Correct. And I think if Ohio wants to stay relevant, they've got to get far more aggressive on the tax situation. Maybe that's the a good lead into our next one.
Yeah. So let's move on from the budget. Let's talk about the two big races that are going to set up in 2022. And I think this is really a microcosm of the Republican Party in general. If you look at any state coming up in 2022 in terms of races, where it's maybe some more mainstream old school Republicans versus Trump Republicans, you're going to see these races take shape in Ohio. So first you're going to have the governor race between Governor DeWine, who again supported President Trump, but they're not very alike. They're not the same type of Republican whatsoever. So Mike DeWine's running against Jim Renacci. And there's a dark horse, and I'm only mentioning him. I don't think he has a chance of winning, but I think he has an opportunity to hurt Jim Renacci, and it's his Joe Blystone. I've heard
he's got the guy with the cowboy hat,
yes,
right?
Yes, he has long hair, cowboy hat. Apparently, some people have seen some of his signs out in rural parts of Ohio. I think, and I've noticed on Jim Renacci's Facebook, and Jim Renacci, to his credit, is very transparent. He likes to interact on his Facebook page in his comment section. And I've been noticing as of late, there's a lot of, not a lot, enough Blystone people who are taking shots at Renacci. And I think they're trying to pick off some of those Trump-type Republicans that do not like DeWine. Remember something here, folks. A lot of the Trump Republicans despise, and I'm going to use the word despise, because if you look at his comment section on Twitter or on Facebook, there's some anger, there's some hatred there of DeWine. They do not like the way he handled COVID, especially when you compare him to, let's say, a DeSantis, perhaps an Abbott in Texas. They don't like the way he handled things, and they're resistant to the idea of him winning again. So I think Renacci's trying to get those types of people and hope that's enough to push him over the finish line. But I think this Blystone is trying to pick some of those people off. And I think it could hurt Renacci, because right now I would, again, peg DeWine maybe at 55% chance of winning. But it's still close. And I think Renacci has a chance as it currently stands. And if Blystone could pick off, 5 to 10%, that could be enough to help DeWine come, is it next May, March or May, something like
that.
Yeah,
we got to figure out when that even is. Yeah. Mike, you know, a couple of points. One is, one thing I've noticed, this was something where I think we both said, and you may have made the point, I'm not trying to single you out, but the thought was, as COVID goes away, the hatred towards DeWine would decline, right? Remember we made that point? We thought, okay, yeah, Renacci was rising and he was doing better against DeWine. Like, early on, we thought there's no way DeWine would lose. And then, like, the last episode or so, we were saying, man, maybe he's got a chance. But we were saying to ourselves, well, maybe once COVID goes away, the anti-DeWine forces will calm down. And one thing I've seen is the opposite. I've actually seen, like, the dislike and the distaste for DeWine staying where it was before. And it seems to me not to have moderated since all the restrictions have gone away and the mask and everything. I don't know if you would agree or disagree on that point.
Mm-hmm.
So the anti-DeWine faction is still very anti-DeWine and very strong. I don't know how big they are. That's the big question. You made a really interesting point. I hadn't thought about this, about the Blystone being a spoiler candidate for the anti-DeWine forces, right? And I see his fans are very loyal. They'll post stuff occasionally, and he's got, like, I think his slogan is he's a constitutional conservative, and he's not a insider. He's got the cowboy hat, right? He's cool. He's a cool looking dude. He looks like he's a country western singer from the 70s, right? And but I don't know if he has the resources to stay in to early spring. That's number one, right? Renacci definitely has the money. He's very wealthy. So maybe it's just like a Facebook phenomenon, right? There are a lot of people that are very loud on the internet, but they don't have a majority of support. You know, look at Twitter, for example. So that's number one. Number two, I don't know about you, but I think it's a 50-50 race. I think it could go either way. And I actually think Renacci could pull the upset of the year, or the decade, and beating sitting Governor Mike DeWine. I didn't think that before, but I increasingly think it's possible. Because here's my thought. The DeWine voters, DeWine has a lot of independent support. He's got a little bit of Democratic support. Say it's 50-50 in the Republican Party. I don't know if they're motivated to vote for him, because a lot of the DeWine people are like, yeah, we like him. He's a good guy. But, you know, we'll vote for him in the general, but we're not primary voters. The people that vote for them in the primaries are usually the furthest to the right or to the left, right? Mm-hmm. And those people are really mad at DeWine. So I think he can lose. I think he's going to lose. I think it's trending that way. I don't know. And here's the other thing. There's a Senate primary too. So that's really going to fire up a lot of the conservative base. And it's going to drive out turnout, right? So I don't know. I think it's 50-50 currently.
Well, here's my thought. Like I said, I think it's maybe 55% odds that DeWine would win. Let me make a quick point, because I tweeted this and I posted it on Facebook the other day. So there's a website, Predict It. You could go and make bets on political races. And one of the bets you could do right now is on the Ohio governor race. And on there, the odds are quite bullish for DeWine. This was as of June 26th. He was at 63 cents. We'll just say 63% odds. Jim Renacci was at 31%. I fully expect those to narrow, but that's actual people putting money down. Another point you made was about independents and Democrats. Here's my thought. Right now, Nan Whalen is the Democrat, I think the only Democrat currently in the race for governor. And there's some rumors that the Cincinnati mayor might come out. If she's the only one running, I feel as though there could be an opening there where some independents that may typically vote in the Democrat primary, or maybe even some Democrats who like DeWine, who might typically vote Democrat, might say, you know what, DeWine's done a pretty good job. I'm willing to, you know, stop the Trump Republicans from, you know, taking this seat from him. Because the interesting thing is, we haven't seen many polls out on DeWine's approval. I think it's probably mid-50s myself. But if you look at it, his numbers are probably porous with Republicans. And that was the case like in a few polls a few months back. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think he's really got to watch what he says and does from a policy perspective. And if he does something this fall with COVID and restrictions again – game over. I think Renacci's going to win. I don't think DeWine is dumb enough to do something like that. I mean, not trying to be harsh here.
I don't think he's dumb, but I think he could do something like that.
I wouldn't. Again, I've said it before. He's on his own little island. You don't really know what goes on in that head of his. I wouldn't put it past him to do something like that, like you just said, Dane. So I don't know. I think Renacci's really trying. I think what he's really trying to do is court Trump to get an endorsement. Problem is, Trump endorsed him in 2018 when he ran statewide against Sherrod Brown and he lost. There was an article a month or two back from the Hill said somebody close to Trump says he has no plans of endorsing Renacci.
Trump doesn't like losers, right?
Yeah, does Renacci lose credibility with the Trump base if he doesn't get the Trump endorsement, do you think?
No, I don't think that. I actually don't think the Trump endorsement is that effective. If you look, there have been a lot of endorsed candidates by Trump that have gone on to loss and to lose rather. And Trump endorses a lot of really losery people. Trump endorses a lot of people that don't necessarily agree with his ideology. The Alabama Senate race, like Jeff Sessions was like a Trumper before Trump existed. And he stabbed him in the back over the whole investigation thing. And then he endorsed like this one guy that Mitch McConnell told him to endorse. So Trump has a horrible record on endorsements. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. People, the Trump people know where Jim stands and where Mike stands on Trump. Right. I don't think that's going to be decisive, and I don't think it's going to be relevant. I think Chandley in the chat, who thanks, Shanley, for listening.
Yes.
Had a really good point that as people get their lives back, they're scared of going through it all over again. And I think, you know, if you see states like California and New York start to shut down, that could potentially, I think if you go through another lockdown, DeWine loses a good portion of the population that supported him the first time. And I think he can lose a lot of support. So I don't know. I think he's in a really tough position. Like, yeah, he's technically stronger, but Jim's well-funded. Jim is very motivated. And depending upon the circumstances, if there's another corona wave, he could be really, really pressured and just cornered. And what does he do?
True. I still would make the argument DeWine is the better general election candidate. And if DeWine is the nominee for the Republicans, I fully expect him to win by 15 to 20 points. I know that's a hot take, but I truly do believe he would win independents resoundingly and a good chunk of Democrats, not a good chunk, but like, you know, 15, 20% of the Democrats who took a liking to him for the way he handled COVID. I think it would be tighter. I think Renacci would still have better than 50-50 odds against a Nan Whalen, but it puts something people got to take a step back here, put the emotions aside and ask themselves, do you want to risk the possibility of a Nan Whalen as governor with COVID possibly still being a thing next year? Because we've seen what our neighboring states have done who have Democrat governors. They obviously are more prone to the idea of instituting restrictions. Do you want to go that far? I'm not asking people necessarily think that, but it's something to consider. And it's something that bothers me. I like a comfortable victory. You know, Portman's had some big wins. Kasich, although he, you know, we saw how he turned out, had some big wins in the state. It's just my concern is having a close race and us losing it to a party that's dying off in this state. And we do so because we let our emotions of how the governor handled COVID to dictate. I mean, this budget, really, there's nothing really in here that to me is, you know, goes against conservative ideology necessarily, unless you've spotted something. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a very fascinating race to watch.
Well, Michael, let me make one more point, though, is we have as Republicans a very unique opportunity to completely reshape Ohio. I think there's a timidity when it comes to the Republican Party and the conservative movement where we always let the left push. And then after they pushed it 10 units, we push back one. Right. And if we were to get I'm undecided at this point. I'm not a DeWine hater. I think he's a decent guy. There are some things I like about Jim. The fact that he lost the Senate race makes me not like him on that front. So I'm completely undecided. But one thing in Jim's favor is I think he would be a very radical governor and reshape politics and really push Ohio far to the right, which, you know, maybe there'll be a little bit of a blowback, but I'd rather take the 10 steps forward and then the 2 steps backward. I think on spending, the Ohio budget is bloated. There is so much room to cut in this spending on the local level. If you look at our tax levels compared and the spending levels compared to the population, it's disproportionate. And I think we could bring taxes down dramatically, not like a little 3% tax cut so that they can technically say, hey, we cut taxes. I think we can really bring taxes down. And I think we need to. And I think we need to do we should have E-Verify in the state of Ohio. The fact that we don't have E-Verify is embarrassing, right? There are all these things we could be doing. I don't know. That's the argument of Jim. It's going big. And like, yeah, to your point, you're not wrong. We could lose in the general, but like if he gets in office, he could be doing a lot. And I don't know. I struggle with it, Michael Metzinger.
Yeah. Another thing that, you know, Governor DeWine's been, he hasn't campaigned virtually at all. Renacci's out there campaigning. He's got, again, that Trump following. I don't know if there's like a ton of people out there that necessarily just love DeWine, but I think there's a lot of people out there who take a liking to him, but don't necessarily love him. And I feel like that's my justification for how I come up with like the 55% odds. What I did find interesting is is I think her name, I know we need to get her on the podcast one of these days. Is it Regina? Yeah, Regina McManus. Hopefully I'm saying her name right. She posted the other day on Facebook a picture of a DeWine Houston event that's going to be held in the Mahoning Valley. And she kind of took offense to some of the people on the list, but there's some well-known names on here.
You want to read some of the names? Who?
Yeah, so like, you know, I just know some of these people offhand, like Robert Burke owns Burke Enterprises. Not sure about Blair. Mike Conney, I believe, owns Mack Trailer and Alliance. Sam Cavelli, Panera franchise, all across the United States. You have the Columbian and Mahoning County chairman of the Republican parties, Ron Klingel, who is with Avalon Holdings, Squaw Creek, and all of those country clubs. Mike Loychek, who sort of surprises me that he's actually on this list, the type of Republican he seems to be from his Twitter account. And then, although I can't say necessarily their last name, but I believe it's AVI Food Systems up in Warren, the Greek last name on there. And then Senator Michael Ruley, Bob Sebo, who I believe founded Paychex, you know, the main competitor to ADP. So there's some big money names on this list from a Mahoning Valley perspective.
Wait, who did you say formed Paychex?
Bob Sebo, I believe.
Oh, wow. I didn't know.
From Salem. I know this from doing some research on this a couple years ago, when actually Youngstown State was hiring their head coach, because there was some involvement there, I think, with Bob Sebo in some way. But yeah, he's a Paychex guy from Salem. I believe he founded it.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's types of people like that when you go through that list. Those are a lot of business owners on there, some really wealthy individuals who are supporting DeWine. I think DeWine's going to raise some money. And this is the first I've seen of him actually doing some campaigning, but we'll see. I think it's still early. I want to see things come the fall in terms of campaigning. Here's going to be the fascinating thing. A lot of the Republican parties, are you going to go there to get a DeWine sign? Like if my wife, I know my wife takes a liking to DeWine, and if we end up choosing, she might take, you know, want to have a DeWine sign in our ear. Am I going to be able to go to the Mahoning County Republican Party? Because it seems like when you see these events, Renacci's going to these Republican headquarters and getting a lot of support. It's going to be kind of a fascinating thing.
Well, it depends on your Republican Party, right? In Geauga, the chairwoman here in Geauga, Nancy MacArthur, is very much a DeWine person. And in Lake County, I think that their leadership is also very closely aligned with DeWine. In the outs, the group on the outside of the leadership is very pro-Renacci, right? So it depends on – here's what I found out about local politics. Everything's on a county basis. And depending upon the county, it's either pro the Ohio establishment or pro, call it, the counter-establishment, right? Like pro-DeWine people, pro-Renacci people. So it just depends. It's moving on from DeWine. Do you want to get to the Senate race? That's another one that is getting spicy. There's definitely an establishment candidate, but I'll let you start.
No, and this is one that's going to be really interesting, because I honestly think you have three truly viable candidates that could each – you could make an argument, find a way to get to that 25 to 30% mark come next March or whenever the primary is. So you have Jane Temkin, who –
all the candidates. Sorry.
Yeah, and there's others. Okay, so you have Jane Temkin, the former Ohio Republican Party chairwoman. Yeah. You have Josh Mandel, who's the former treasurer, I believe, of the state, who ran unsuccessfully in 2012 against Sherrod Brown, I believe.
Well, did he run or did he with? Oh, he did run and lose. You're right.
Ran in 2012, 2018, he backed out, which led to Renacci being the Republican candidate, because Renacci was actually running against DeWine, I believe, for governor at the time.
That's right.
So then you have J.D. Vance, who just announced this evening, who's Ryan Gerdusky's guy. He's the author of, I believe it's Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah,
did I say that correctly? Yeah. You have Cleveland businessman Mike Gibbons. Okay. You have
– he's an investment banker.
There you go.
Browns Gibbon Lang.
There you go. Bernie Moreno. I don't know who he is.
He's also a businessman. I think he had car dealerships, and he's in the Toledo, west side of Cleveland area.
Okay, and then I don't necessarily know if I have all the others out there. I have somebody, Mike Turner, at least according to Predicted. So I'm not sure who he is. I don't know if I'm missing anybody. I feel like there might be another person as well. There might be something to the tune of 7 or 8 candidates, but I think the first three I mentioned are the three that have legitimate chances. I feel like maybe we'll see if we agree here. I feel like Timken's more of the establishment type candidate.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's the one that behind the scenes, the Republicans statewide are trying to get the Republican operation, I would say. Then you have Josh Mandel, who's coming at this way too aggressively, in my humble opinion. I do not like his style at all. He's taking, like, I view the worst of Trump and making it like the worst of Trump on steroids with his approach. I don't know why he's doing this. He already had the name recognition. I don't know why he had to come in it from this perspective. And then you have JD Vance, who's kind of coming at, I would argue maybe some from listening to him this evening, more from a populist, some a different type of conservative perspective. It's going to be a really, really fascinating race to watch.
Yeah. So, okay. Here's my take on all the candidates. I think I have said to Ryan Jarduski, who's been on this podcast before, J.D. Vance, he's got the right issue base, but he's got a lot of problems. My guy is J.D. Vance. I think J.D. Vance on the issues, I'm most aligned with him. So full disclosure. The problem with J.D. Vance is I think he comes across wrong to a lot of people. And I think he also was entering in too late and is a little too confident because Jane Timken, say what you will about her, she's like the Hillary Clinton of this race. And what I mean by that is she's personally, from what I understand, she's personally unlikable, right? Kind of a nasty woman. She's very wealthy, so she's got lots of money. She's got the establishment, also like Hillary. But one thing Hillary did was Hillary never had the charisma of her husband, but she arguably had a really hard work ethic, right? You know, she kind of was appointed to a bunch of various positions, but like she kind of worked at it. She was not a lazy person by any means. Jane Timken has been out there going through the grassroots, collecting party chairs, collecting endorsements. She's got an endorsement page a mile long. And that matters. That counts, right? That translates. People are starting to hear her name, who Jane Timken is. Josh Mandel, I think, has the grassroots support as of right now. I don't think grassroots like J.D. Vance. I think eggheads like myself like J.D. Vance. And maybe people from Middlefield, Ohio, where he's from, like J.D. Vance. But the people outside the rest of the state, most people don't know what Hillbilly Elegy is. And he does come across as like a private equity guy, right, who's trying to pretend to be a hillbilly, right, instead of a hillbilly that's trying to pretend to be a private equity guy. And I think he just comes across the wrong way. He's saying the right things. I like his message a lot, but I don't know. I think he's going to struggle unless he really reorients his campaign and really just changes how he's approached it and really starts busting ass because he's behind. Say what you will about Josh Mandel. Josh Mandel has been working very, very hard. I see him at tons of local events. He's constantly out meeting people. He's constantly going to like a 500-person event or 200-person event. And he's active. He's very active. And there's something a little phony about Josh Mandel. There's something a little fake. He's obviously pretending to be a super Trumpster. I don't think that's how he's from Beechwood, right? He was in an ad with like a country accent and he's from Beechwood. If anybody knows anything about Beechwood, it's kind of like it's a middle upper class or middle class suburb, very Jewish. You know, it's not country.
It's a nice shopping mall. I don't know if it still is nice.
We're not going to go there.
Okay. It's gone downhill since I've been there.
Yeah, dramatically. They don't have a J. Crew anymore. But my point is, like, I don't know. I think Josh Mandel, if I had to pick who wins, I would say it, Josh Mandel.
Interesting. I still feel as though Timken's ultimately going to win because I think the operation behind the scenes is going to find a way to get her to win. I think here's why Mandel's ahead in the polls right now. He's been elected statewide as state treasurer in 2010. He ran in 2012 against Sherrod Brown. People know who he is. I don't think necessarily – every Republican knows who Jane Timken is. And I know for a fact, not every Republican knows who JD Vance is, because somebody who follows politics like me doesn't know everything about JD Vance. Whereas right. I know a great deal.
I read his book.
Well, that's it. You know more than me. But I feel like Mandel right now is fortunate because he has the name recognition. I think it's early. He's going to get those people who for sure are going to come out, who I view have their – let their emotions kind of guide their vote-leaning preference. And I think Mandel's tapping into those emotions of those people who don't like the Republican establishment. One of the things that's interesting about Mandel, and I've kind of gone off after him on Twitter about, is the fact that he likes to go after Governor DeWine, yet he's running for Senate. So you can see – what he's trying to do
has
there.
Has he replied to you?
He has not, but he does follow me. He did follow me a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
sure he had to have blocked me by now because I go after him all the time on there because, quite frankly, I just don't care for him. Shanley in the chat had mentioned Josh Mandel is so terribly contrived and scripted. He's a soulless ladder climber. He just runs for office in order to set up his next campaign move. He definitely did that from 2010 to 2012 because you could tell. I mean, he was only treasurer for 2 years, and he's like, trying to make the jump up to Senate. He's I view him as an opportunist. He did not have a Twitter account during all of 2020. He was really missing in action during 2020. I can't find too much of what he even said in 2020. He created his Twitter account. I could be wrong on this, but I know it's sometime in 2021. So he just kind of like comes at this like, ooh, I have an opening to run for Senate after Portman announces he's not going to run. I'm going to try to get these Trump the people. Okay. I'm not trying to attack Trump people here. Let me, Trump people. Yes.
I was a Trump people.
I want people to understand it. When I say that, I'm saying the people who have been with Trump from the get-go, who supported Trump in the Republican primary in 2016 before he was the eventual nominee. So that when I say that, that's what I'm talking about. Those type of voters. He's trying to go after them, Mandela's. But I see right through him. I think he's fake, and I think if Mandel or Vance can do a decent job of getting their name out there and educating voters, they have a chance. But I would view Timken's odds at getting the nomination to be better than Vance's right now.
Yeah, Timken's odds are better than Vance's. Here's my case for – and I've gone back and forth in this, so it'll change the next time we talk. But here's my case for Mandel. Mandel – is in person. His issue set is he's a better politician than Jane Timken. Okay. He's very opportune. Everything you just said is basically true. He's opportunistic, right? But there was a video circulating on Facebook from a week or so ago with Jane Timken. And I forget the issue, but somebody asked her about Anthony Gonzalez, the congressman from the west side of Cleveland, the vote to impeach Trump. And somebody asked her something about Anthony Gonzalez, and she just fell apart. She couldn't handle the question, right? She's not a natural on stage. Ryan made this point, and he's right to his credit. She's not a natural on stage. So I don't know. I think Josh is more in line with the issues of the average Ohio voter. And the other thing is he's willing to do the work. This is my big problem with J.D. Vance. He has been AWOL for the entirety of this year. It's July 1st. The year's halfway over. All that.
It's interesting. He waited till now to announce.
Yes, and he Mandel.
And we'll ask Ryan Gerdusky why, unless he sees an opening there in the polling data. But why July 1st?
Right. Sorry to cut you off. No. Cut me off, please. I do it to you all the time. He waited so late, and he's they've been building networks, right? And he's jumping in, and it's like, who's left for him to pick over? Who's left for him to convince? I don't know. I just think he doesn't seem like he's going to do the homework. He's saying the right things. He needs to just start busting ass because he's frankly behind. And until he starts doing that, Josh Mandel is getting the rural vote, right? He's getting some of the Trump vote. I think he's leading in the polls for a reason. He's got the name recognition. I don't know. You got to give the guy credit. He is doing the homework. I always respect politicians that get out there and campaign. Okay. Even if I don't agree with them, and even if they're shamelessly opportunistic, if they're busting ass, they get a little bit of respect from me because they're doing that. And Josh Mandel is frankly doing that. So I don't know. I can appreciate that.
So in the chat, my cousin Nico wants us to talk about the other side of the ticket or the other party that
We have to. We have to.
Oh, yeah. Tim Ryan. He wants to know if he will get his facts about September 11th right this time. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that. I believe that's in reference to maybe the one Democrat debate where there's a takedown from Tulsi Gabbard. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, that's what it, I think the reference is. Yeah.
So currently I think Tim Ryan's going to run unopposed on the Democrat side. I think this is by design. I think Nan Whalen's going to run unopposed. Tim Ryan's going to run unopposed with the hopes that they could raise money. There's going to be these contested primaries on the Republican side. And the hope is that the Republicans are going to deplete their funds so the Democrats have some sort of financial advantage going into the general. And, you know, they're hoping from the money perspective, maybe they have a bit of an edge and that could push them across the finish line. But they – here's Tim Ryan's thing. I don't want to call it a shtick, but it kind of is. I think he's going to try to run like a Sherrod Brown. He's going to take the Sherrod Brown talking points, act as though he's an old school Democrat that's all about the working man, which he's been trying to do on his Twitter account. He's going to abandon the ideas or his connections with the elite Democrats of the coast.
Right.
And he's going to just try to win over those areas that traditionally had voted Democrat in the past and hope that's enough for him to get over the finish line. Somebody who lives in his district, somebody like you who knows Tim Ryan over the years, you're from the same county as him. We know who he truly is. He might be able to get away with it now, but I think us locally know that that's not Tim Ryan.
Tim Ryan is, he's just, it's, oh man, Tim Ryan's my favorite dude to talk about because he's so inept. And
he does have a nice soft t-shirt though, remember?
Oh, his t-shirt is so nice. I almost wore my Tulsi Gabbard shirt, which is really nice. The Marianne Williamson t-shirt's by far the best of all those people. He ran for president and lost. Does anybody else remember that? Like, that's so bizarre. People just have memory hold that. I completely agree with you. That's his strategy. He's going to be the Sherrod Brown, right? Run on a national level. I'm a working class Dem. You know, we used to make stuff back in the day. And the problem with that, though, is that the Republican Party, it's not your papa's Republican Party, right? It's changed. It's far more aligned with the working class. It's far more nationalistic. It's all these good things we talked about. And it's far more, you know, like, why should we give tax breaks to company outsource? Like, our goal should be to protect America. Part of America is capitalism and fair play, right? But that doesn't mean companies should be able to screw over their workers, number one, and outsource all the jobs to foreign countries, right? Like, how is it being patriotic and pro-American, pro-capitalism, if we outsource our entire industrial base to China and then the Chinese declare war on us, right? Does it? So the Republicans are not the Republicans of yesteryear. So Tim Ryan's schtick just doesn't resonate as well. And does anybody remember when, like, circa 5-6 years ago, Tim Ryan tried to reinvent himself? This is kind of insider politics. I'm going to ask you, Mike, when he tried to reinvent himself as like the tech guy in Congress. So his whole thing was like, we've got to get federal funding and we've got to fund 3D printing and we've got to fund nanotechnology. And we've got to fund, like, every little buzz thing that came out. Like, now it's electric vehicles. We got to be the Voltage Valley. We got to fund AI, right? And, like, and he would go – there was, like, a New York Times article where he's in this, like, limousine with all these tech billionaires in San Francisco. Nothing ever came of it, but he's like, yeah, I'm the tech guy. I'm going to bring tech money to Youngstown. Does anybody remember that? Like, he tried to – now he's going back to, like – we don't need 3D printers. We need factories and good union paying jobs. You know, am I crazy here?
Well, you're definitely on the right track.
Do you remember that? The tech stuff?
Yep. He's all over. If you go back, you could probably use that archive.org website to go back to his campaign websites and see the evolution of where he stands on certain policies and what his, what the hot slogan is of the day for him. And while we talk about him, I posted up – well, first, there's a comment in the chat from John. He says, Tim Ryan, I wish my district would vote him out. Maybe he's running for Senate because his seat was lost from the census. I think you're right on track there. He knows that his seat, especially with the Republicans in control, although I know there's some supposed to be some bipartisan redistricting or bipartisan map drawing commission of some sort. The Republicans still have control ultimately of how these districts are going to be drawn, and with the state losing one Senate or one congressional seat, Tim Ryan's likely going to be the one who's going to lose his. So I agree with you there. Another thing is, on the screen, I posted Tim's Ryan margin of victory in the district, and it's just been going downhill from a high of 45% in 2012, went to 37, to 35, to 22, to 7.6 in 2020. So as you can see, it's cratering. And if the people in his own backyard aren't supporting him as like they used to, why would the people statewide? Somebody's going to eventually see this chart or something along those lines and hopefully ask the question, well, what's happening in your own backyard here, Timmy? Because clearly the support's cratering in his own backyard. He lost his own county. I believe he even lost his own precinct in 2020 against Christina Hagan. So
that's kind of
sad. You know, we've talked about this before. I think Tim Ryan had an opening a few years ago statewide. I thought that's really what he needed to do if he wanted to have a run for president. He opted against it. I think the problem is he's 4 years, 6 years too late. The Democrat Party does not have the support that it once had in Ohio. And you could look at the border from Ohio and Pennsylvania down through Ohio and West Virginia, from Ashtabula County all the way down to southern Ohio. That part of the state has changed politically from especially the northeast Ohio, Ashtabula, Trumbull, Mahoning, shifting from traditionally dark blue or somewhat blue to a purple, or in Ashtabula's case, somewhat reliably Republican. And then down the river, those were some blue collar areas that in the past had voted Democrat or were more 50-50 that are dark red now. And it makes it very difficult for the Democrats to win statewide, because you're not going to necessarily pick that all up in Franklin County or in Columbus, or in Hamilton County in Cincinnati, or the big urban centers. You're just not. There's plenty of population in the rural parts of the state to offset that. So it makes it difficult for any Democrat truly to win statewide right now. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Depending on, I do have concerns if Mandel's the candidate.
I do too, because he lost, right? And he ran and dropped. I do too. Oh God, if Tim Ryan becomes our senator, that's going to be just genuinely disappointing.
We've seen his history as a congressman. I don't think we would necessarily be inclined to seeing that happen statewide as our senator. So
here's my hot take. I think the chances of Renacci losing the governor's race, the gubernatorial election, is lower than Mandel losing to Tim Ryan. And in other words, like, these are the outsider candidates, like, not the establishment. Renacci has a far better chance of being the governor than Mandel has of being the senator, because I can see people voting Republican on a local level but voting Democrat on the federal level. It happens, right? You've had elections in the past where Sherrod Brown wins, and if Tim Ryan manages to pull the wool over people's eyes and convince them that he's a moderate Democrat, he could win. And I don't know. I think if you're going to take one risk, I'd rather take the risk of Jim Renacci running for governor than Mandel, because I do think Mandel could lose.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And the other thing is, no, I know you. I don't know exactly what you said about Renacci, but I kind of still look at him as he's not really like. I look at Mandel and Renacci, and they're not the same. They might be championing the same ideas, but their personalities are different. Renacci's an older gentleman. He's a good mass attending Catholic. I see him post pictures every week. He seems like a really great family man. And I'm not saying Mandel isn't, but he just has a different personality, and I think he would be more. That personality would be more electable on a statewide level than Mandel's. I think an independent would be more inclined to give Renacci a chance than they would Mandel.
I totally agree. Yeah.
I have pretty strong feelings against Mandel. I don't have those against Renacci. I like Renacci. My biggest pushback to Renacci is the fact he lost in 2018 by 8 points.
Yeah.
That same year, DeWine did win by 4 points in a race he was supposed to lose. that's my main pushback. I don't necessarily disagree with Renacci on a lot. I maybe disagree with some of his takes on DeWine and that, but that's another thing. That's fine. I expect that. But Mandel's, I have concerns. I have great concerns of a Mandel Ryan race that Ryan could look more electable and somehow pull an upset, which is concerning to me. Yeah. In the chat, by the way, we do have another Blystone supporter, John, in the chat, Blystone 2022. So I'm telling you, there's people out there who are taking a liking to him.
He's a good, like he's a decent guy. I don't know
hat,
how many.
The hat it's the is pretty hat. Badass.
He does seem cool. Like I'm a big fan. He's got the big hat. He's got the beard, right? Like, yeah, I like him. He's got that hat. Yeah, he does. Look, I'm on his website right now. He's got the hat. Fuck. Maybe if I were like advising the DeWine people, I'd be like, get a cowboy hat and just wear it constantly.
Him and Frank could wear one.
Yeah, look at that. Oh man, he's attacking Renacci and DeWine. Oh man, Blystone.
I actually am going to pull up a photo. There we go. There's the legend himself, Joe Blystone. I mean, you look at the guy, you don't want to mess with him. Beard's it's a solid beard. Solid. He sports the hat tremendously.
Yeah.
He could tell. He knows his stuff. You don't want him in the debate. I don't know much about him other than I love the hat. I will say.
His little logo is the hat. It's just the hat. I'd vote for that hat. I'd be governed by that hat. Yes. Like, look at it. It has gravitas. I'm a big fan.
So we'll wrap up because we're going a little long. We'll talk briefly about our last topic, and Nico's kind of hinting to it here. What are your outlooks for the 2024 election and more generally the national political landscape as a whole? Certain states moving to the left or right. I think maybe we could talk about that next episode, maybe identify certain states, maybe where they could possibly move. I think some people are automatically just saying, oh, Georgia's a Democrat state. I don't subscribe to that notion necessarily, and same goes with Arizona. I don't subscribe to that. We'll get to that. The one thing I wanted to talk about, and I'm not necessarily trying to stir the pot here, people, but I do believe we're going to start seeing the makings of some friction in some sort between Trump and DeSantis. So I guess on Hannity the other night, Trump was in Texas with Governor Abbott. He was on Hannity's show, and I believe Hannity asked him to something to the effect of, are you going to run in 2024 or have you made your mind up? And I think he said something to the effect of, yes, I'll announce it after 2022. For the last, 7 months, I thought Donald Trump is not going to run ultimately for run again in 2024. I didn't believe that. I'm starting to backtrack on that. I've been kind of posted a couple things. Somebody commented on my Twitter today about it. And I'm going to quote it. Can't find Mike is the Twitter hash or Twitter username. Don't want to see a Trump versus DeSantis dogfight, but I think it might happen. Trump doesn't take losing, and you know he wants revenge. Not sure DeSantis wants to lose his momentum coming off COVID cultural pushback. I agree. I know.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
I feel like we're inevitably going to have friction between Trump and DeSantis. And I think it's because, again, Trump wants revenge. Trump believes he won. I don't believe he won personally, but I think he should have won. Trust me, I wanted him to win. I had a freaking sign in my yard, people. I think from a policy perspective, there's no reason Trump should have lost. From an opposition perspective, he ran against Joe Biden. He had no business losing to Joe Biden. My thinking is the reason he lost is because people, quite frankly, just don't like Trump. There's enough people out there on the Democrat side who don't like him. There's enough independents who didn't like him. And there's enough old school Republicans who refuse to support him that cost him. That's just my personal opinion. But I know how Trump is. He's got a strong personality. He doesn't like the fact that he lost, and he wants revenge. On the flip side, you got DeSantis, who right now the media has been trying to, you know, throw darts at him, hoping something sticks, something would knock him down. They failed every time thus far. there's some polls out right now that show him up anywhere from 9 to 22 in his race for Florida governor, against the two candidates, Charlie Crist, former governor, who former Republican governor turned Democrat. He's up 9 on him, up 22 on, I think her name's Nikki Fried, who's like the only statewide Democrat in Florida. I've made my prediction on Twitter. If DeSantis wins by 6 or 8 points, I feel like he's in cruise control for the front runner spot.
Even with Trump running?
Here's my thought. If DeSantis wins by that much, he has the best opening of anybody to win in 2024. And I think it would be ill-advised for Trump to run. That's my thought, but I don't know. I feel like Trump's still going to do it. And I don't think a Trump just appeasing people by saying we're going to have a Trump DeSantis ticket is the way to go.
Why would you do that if you're DeSantis, right?
That's my point. DeSantis would have such an opening there. And a win in Florida by that margin is a substantial, you know, that's a margin. He could end up winning by double digits there, which is remarkable. I mean, and I just feel like if you're winning Florida by double digits, if he wins it by that, he is by far and away the most electable type of Republican on a national level. That's just my opinion. I'm willing to listen to any other type of Republican out there. I'm not saying I am DeSantis 2024, but God, if you're Trump and you see that, I think you got to say, you know what? As much as I want revenge, he's our guy to get it. And I know that's a lot of hot takes there, and I know I probably pissed some people off, but that's just my personal opinion.
So Trump is still the leader of the Republican Party, number one. Okay. And what I mean by that is he was able to come to Ohio and he turned out 10,000 people more. I heard 30,000. I don't know. Thousands of people. Okay. The representatives in the House, less so the senators, all are loyal to him, except for a couple that voted for the impeachment, at probably his lowest point, right? He still has, I think, the majority, if not a plurality of support within the Republican Party. And I think there are a lot of Republicans out there that are spoiling for a rematch because they thought that the 2020 election was rigged or fraudulent in some way. Okay. So all that said, Trump has a commanding position. Okay. And if you're DeSantis, right, I think a lot of people like DeSantis. If Trump doesn't run, I think DeSantis is the odds on favor to get it, but by and away, no doubt there. But if you're DeSantis and Trump runs, question one, do you decide to run and challenge him or do you just wait? Because you got time. You're young. You don't need to do it now. Question two, if you challenge him, how do you take him down? How do you take the king down? Because this is what Trump is willing to do that DeSantis is not, okay? And this is going to sound hot, but what did Trump get the original support on? It was immigration, right? It wasn't things like tax cuts. It was, we're going to ban Muslims from entering into the United States. It was, when, you know, some of them are good people, but there are rapists coming across our border, right? It was a willingness to go where other people would not go, right? It was willingness to no longer play the respectability politics. And the desire on the Republican base for him to go to places where no politician would go and talk about issues that people actually cared about instead of the damn capital gains tax rate, which doesn't affect the vast majority of Americans, that's what got people to not only listen to him, but support him. Right. And that's why there's this. This is what nobody gets. That's why there's this loyal attachment to Trump. So my question for you, Mike, is Trump is willing to say anything to win. And if he's running up against DeSantis, he's going to go further to the right and he's going to actually move. Trump moved the entire Republican Party to the right on some issues, to the left on other issues. Right. He's going to pull. How, if you're DeSantis and you still have like a veneer of respectability because you're a governor, how do you beat that? How do you take him down?
I think from a policy position, you stick to, I don't think you're necessarily going to have many differences on policy. I just think it's going to be style.
It's going to be style. Yeah.
But I think that matters. I know there's going to be pushback to it. And I know, you know, I went after the one guy on Twitter the other day. Actually, I did yesterday. David Chapman. He's an interesting Twitter account. But he said if there was a Trump rally and a DeSantis rally in the same town at the same time, most people would be at the Trump rally. I don't disagree with that. 100%. Actually, I 100% agree with that. But my point is, I don't think that matters at all. Because if we're so focused on rally size, what matters more, rally size or votes? I still deep down believe that policy-wise, they're virtually identical. Style-wise, they're different. But I do think style matters. Because when I look back on 2020 and I ask myself, how did Trump lose? Again, I truly don't believe he lost because of his policies. I think COVID played a factor. I'm not going to deny that. I don't think he lost on policies. I don't think he lost because everybody loved Joe Biden. I just think he lost because people – there is a large number of people who despise him. But that's not the case on the Republican side. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, that's where I'm going because this is a primary. The general's a whole different story.
Here's
right?
The key point here.
How do you beat Trump in the primary?
Here's the key point, I think, and I'm not necessarily looking at primary. I'm looking at let's go back to the previous election. Trump brought a lot of people to the fold. A lot of people who maybe typically don't vote brought him on. They voted for him. The question is, did he bring more of those people on, or did he allow for a greater slippage of people who traditionally voted Republican? So, like, what I'm trying to say is, is it a net gain by him being the Republican candidate, or was it a net decline? Because there are independents and some Republican type voters who would maybe traditionally would have voted for him that didn't. But did we come out ahead because we brought new people into the fold? Does that make sense?
It's a good question. It's a good question. But my point is, how do you take down Trump? How do you take down?
I just think
how?
If you stick to if you're DeSantis, you just don't. At least for right now, don't even get into this whole idea of friction. I'm not trying to say it's even happening right now because I don't think it necessarily is yet. I think it could be soon. I'm just saying I think it's going to happen. I just think you guys got to stick with just doing the best damn job that you could possibly be doing as governor. Stick to the ideas of the issues, especially some of these issues that a lot of – like a DeWine is not going to touch. I know there's seems like every week there's some piece of legislation that DeSantis is signing in the law that a DeWine is not going to touch. And you just run on the fact that here's my record. I won a state like Florida by double digits in 2022. I'm by far and away the most electable Republican to champion the America First agenda.
I don't know. We had other people that ran on electability and it lost.
I don't disagree, but they didn't have the policy backing, I think.
Fair. I don't know. I think if you're Trump, I don't know how he attacks a DeSantis. I don't know what he would call him. That's a good, interesting question. But I think Trump is actually, if Trump runs again, I actually don't think he should run it again. So this is the difference, right? There's what will happen and what should. I don't think he should run again. I think he should pass on the torch. I think DeSantis would be far more effective at implementing his policies. However, I do believe if he runs again, he is the man to beat, and he will have 55% to 40 to 55% of that Republican Party, and it's iron locked. It's not going away. The only thing that could make him vulnerable if he decides to run again is his age, and if there were age-related slip-ups or problems, right? If he started, you know, if he fell or something like that, that's it. No, and I think that's like the hot take of hot takes. Like he's a juggernaut.
I don't disagree. I think ultimately people are going to have to come to this conclusion. Let me say this. I think 2022, what happens in Florida is going to matter. And if the margin's big enough, I think, again, I believe Trump would be ill-advised to run. I think he needs to look at it and ask himself, am I really the best guy to take down, let's say it's Kamala Harris? Because I still question whether – I've been wrong on this from the beginning, but I still think Joe Biden is not going to be the nominee. I didn't think he'd win. I didn't think he would even be the Democrat nominee last time. I thought Kamala Harris actually would be. I just think they're very similar from policy, but I think people got to come to grips with the style matters. I know the style of Trump resonates with the core Republican voters or the people who really are going to go out to the polls. But I truly believe the most electable type of style is what DeSantis has. And I, again, this is just a bunch of hypothetical discussion that we're having here. But these are discussions I've kind of had with my coworkers over the past few weeks. And I thought it was good to have on here. And I'd love to have somebody like a Gina on who is a huge Trump supporter. I'd love to hear his thoughts on this. Because I think by and large, the people who like Trump like DeSantis. And I think by and large, the people who like DeSantis for the most part like Trump. But I think there's some more establishment type people who like DeSantis because they, again, like myself, view him to be more electable. It is not like he doesn't go after the media. He'll take on the media. He'll go after them. He'll do some Trump type things, but he does it in a different way that he's more polished, I guess.
Yeah, I hear you.
There's just something about him that differs.
I think people underestimate Trump as his peril, though. I think he's still a very, very, very strong force.
I don't disagree. I'm just offering my thoughts that if DeSantis wins big, I think it would be ill-advised for Trump to do that. Because I feel as you, the window, then what? I mean, DeSantis can't run again for governor, so he would have to run for senator. He already has two Republican senators in the state. Are you going to take down Rubio, who may end up winning? But Rubio could end up winning his Senate seat by more than DeSantis ends up winning his governor seat. And then Rick Scott. I mean, I just feel as though the opening's going to be there for DeSantis based on what we currently see. And I understand he's young, but what is he going to do after he's governor that gives him a better opening? That's just my thought. Now, we could go back over the years. Like, there was a time there where people thought – I remember Bobby Jindal from Louisiana. People were
Bobby Jindal.
Chris Christie in New Jersey. People were Chris Christie. Yeah. The same thing could happen with the DeSantis. We're just having some fun here, having some discussion. But these are – there's a lot of Trump DeSantis type tweets I've been noticing as of late. Interesting. Not that this is – friction necessarily, but I believe from what I read, I believe it's in the Washington Examiner, which is a right-leaning publication, that DeSantis has asked Trump to postpone his rally on January 3rd in Sarasota because of the condo that collapsed, and I believe it's Miami. Trump has not done so. That's, again, according to reports, that could be fake news, but that would be perhaps like the first sign. A couple weeks ago, I think there was even some articles where Trump or DeSantis wasn't committing to actually even attending the rally, which would have been interesting because a lot of people up here were attacking DeWine because he didn't attend the rally. It's really fascinating. I don't know if we've seen something like this before where you have somebody as popular as Trump, but you also have somebody so popular like DeSantis. How that would all work, I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, Michael, I think it's – do you think it's time to wrap up?
I think it is. This one went a little long. I know we talked a lot.
We had a lot of viewers, though.
Yeah, so it was we enjoyed it. So one of the things, you know, we've been saying this over the last 15 episodes, maybe try to set a schedule, but we want to start having some people on. So next show, we're working on getting Nick Santucci, who is running in Trimble County for the 64th district seat, currently occupied by Mike O'Brien, the Democrat, who I believe is term limited. So Nick Santucci is 30 years old. I believe he used to work for the regional chamber. He has another position in the area right now. So we're trying to have him on. We're also going to have on Brian Janicek, who I believe is tuning in right now. I probably just butchered his last name. I believe he's either a Juris Doctor student or graduate from Scalia School of Law at George Mason University. We're going to have him on to talk about the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court currently, how it's currently shaping up. We just saw a bunch of rulings. What's the exact wording from a Supreme Court case? What's the word?
Decision.
Yes, I was going to say it's not a verdict. Decisions that come out. So we're going to have him on and kind of talk, because talking internally with him this evening, we couldn't have him on, but we're going to try to have him on next time. He's viewing it from a different perspective than maybe a traditional person is from his legal background. So I'll be curious to have him on, hear his thoughts on the Supreme Court of the United States. But so we're going to work on that. Hopefully sometime in mid-July, we'll get that scheduled and kind of go from there and try to hopefully get some other Republican candidates on. And we're also trying to get on not sure what his name. He started a more left-leaning publication. He's big on the Youngstown Reddit community, and he's on Twitter, and he wants to come on our show. We just can't seem to get a date set. So we're going to try to get him on and talk with somebody of the opposing viewpoint. So
there you go.
We got some things in the works, because I know not everybody necessarily wants to just listen to us, although we have some good discussions, Dane.
Occasionally.
Yes.
Hey, I think it's time for our sponsor.
Yes, this is the key of the night. Everybody wants to know, who do we got?
Our sponsor for tonight's episode is Milk Boy Switzerland Swiss Chocolate Alpine Milk with crunchy caramel and sea salt. One thing I really like about this is that it's made by virgin Swiss children who have never left Switzerland. They've only consumed the purest mountain springs and the freshest mountain air. You can see one of them on the label. And then they make these little chocolate squares and add caramel and sea salt to them. The sea salt, of course, is free-range sea salt. It's allowed to frolic freely before it's harvested. The caramel is organic caramel, only the most natural caramel plants. And they make these little squares, and these chocolate squares, and they make them into the squares. They assemble into a rectangle, and they sell it. And yuppies like me pay like $45 for a bar, and then we eat them, and we gain weight, and it's just not good. But look, you can see more of the little Swiss people. And the Swiss, I don't know if you're aware, they love to sponsor radical right-wing podcasts in the Northeast Ohio area. So we want to thank them for their sponsoring of it, and Viva Switzerland.
That was very kind of them. I love the free range salt comment. Yeah. That was on point, Dave. I really like that.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. I try.
All right. Thank you again, everybody, for tuning in, whether it be live or tuning into the podcast. If you have any comments or anything that you want to share with us, by all means, let us know. We got three people like the podcast page tonight on Facebook. So that's
wow.
So three random people. So we appreciate that. So we're reaching the masses by spamming the crap out of this on random Facebook groups.
There you go.
So we appreciate America. Everybody's support. Hope everybody has a tremendous Independence Day. Be careful if you light fireworks off, but let's celebrate our independence. And how old's the country going to be? I can't do the math in my head. 245. Okay. Sorry, Mr. Nalepa. He would not be too proud of me right now. As an accountant, I rely on a 10 key, which is not a good thing. So on that note, we're going to conclude. Thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
See you, Dane.